This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Justin McCord, a former overall winner of the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship and a winner of nearly $20,000 in his high stakes career. In this episode, we break down the roles that Josh Doctson and Sterling Shepard will play for fantasy owners, the Washington backfield without Rob Kelly, and how he's managed a team into the top 40 of this year's FFPC main event. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion David Hubbard. The winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager Nelson Sousa, Hubbard shares a few stories from his season-long grind this year, as well as another fantasy adjustment in the Green Bay backfield. You can follow Hubbard on Twitter at 208-858-740. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard. More injury news this week, and it has to do with the Packers backfield again. Aaron Jones goes down, Ty Montgomery. We don't know if he's going to give it a go against the Ravens this week. Obviously, Jamal Williams has to be owned. He's going to be picked up in a lot of leagues this week. If Montgomery is indeed out, can you start Williams with any kind of confidence this weekend against Baltimore?
You could, depending on what your running back situation is with Freeman's injury and Zeke being out. And there's a lot of fluid situations, and your running back situation's bad. Sure, you could plug Williams in and play. I think Ty Montgomery's probably going to go. I think now they're going to I don't even think he's injured. I think it was a pain tolerance deal, and they're going to start shooting him up. And he's just going to play. We'll see how that works out. But yeah, I would definitely play Williams if I was in a bind at running back or the second running back, and if I had him, and they did, Montgomery wasn't active.
If that does indeed become the case where Montgomery is active, how do you see percentage wise? How do you see the touches being split between him and Williams?
I think they want to go with Montgomery. I think it'll be 80-20, just giving Montgomery some breathers, depending on how he deals with the pain and that type of thing. But I think if he's ready to go and he plays, he's going to get the majority of the touches.
Let's talk about Shady McCoy here, Dave. Two games in a row that he's really let his owners down. How concerned are you about his production down the stretch while you're submitting lineups that grow more and more important each week?
Shady's an interesting guy. I really can't put it on Shady. The Bills just opened up a can of quit 2 weeks in a row. And the game flow has been terrible for them. Their defense, like, just quit almost. Like, they just getting torched. So I don't know if it's Shady or if it's just the Bills team in general right now. And maybe they can turn it around. But if they don't, and then play behind and the offensive line doesn't block and the defense doesn't tackle, you can't expect too much from Shady. But I have a feeling the NFL teams go through phases like that, and the Bills were at one time looking like a pretty good team, and their defense was playing pretty well. But the last 2 weeks, for whatever reason, they have not played well. So, I mean, if you own Shady, you drafted him early, almost first round, so you're going to play him. You're going to win or lose with him one way or the other, so there's no way you're sitting him. So if you own him, you're probably going to play him.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to sit a guy like that while he's healthy, coming into these money weeks. Shifting the focus from the Buffalo backfield to the Chargers backfield, Austin Eckler actually had a good game, if you take away that late fumble that he had. But, you know, he gets the two touchdowns, several catches through the air. How realistic a possibility is it that Los Angeles starts to become more of an RBVC with Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler after the big performance from him on Sunday?
I really don't think there's a chance of that. I think that's just a one-game deal, and I don't know if, like, Gordon was coming out of the bye week. I mean, coming out with injury, thought he would be healthy, but maybe he's still not 100%, and they're trying to limit his touches for a couple weeks to save him for late in the year. He's their running back. There's no doubt about that. And the Eckler kid's good, though. I like the Eckler kid. I own a little bit of him, but I no way I'm playing him. I'm just playing Gordon and seeing what happens from here on out.
I mean, he's the clear handcuff to Gordon. If Gordon were to go down, Eckler could be like a top 15 guy.
Oh, 100%. I think he's easily the clear handcuff. I think Oliver's just kind of too small for that role, and Oliver's more of a pass-catching third down, change of pace guy, where Eckler looks like he could touch the ball 15, 20 times a game with no problems.
Trying to repeat as 2016 FFPC main event champs is obviously tough to impossible. But managing as many teams as you guys do might be even tougher than repeating. What's been the most challenging aspect that you, Nelson, and Austin have faced this season?
I think we did too many teams, to be honest, because I think – and really, I'm retired now, so I have a lot of time. But when you do this many teams, just the sheer volume of the waiver wire work, people that don't do this many teams have no idea. It's just it's unreal almost. It's 12 to 14 hours a day. So I don't think I'll ever do this many season-long teams again, because I don't think I give the attention to a team early in the season. Now the teams start condensing, because the ones that are going to try to make you some money, the ones you're going to be paying attention to more than the ones that aren't. So it gets easier as the season goes along, but we made a lot of mistakes this year that I consider like bad mistakes on the waiver wire, starting set situations. And I think it's a time deal where you can't spend the time you need to look and analyze that team and do what you need. You're in a hurry to get to the next one and make sure you get them all in under the wire. I'll tell you a funny story. I was clicking one night so hard that I clicked on Devontae Freeman and dropped him, and got a hold of Dave, and Dave's, how it happens all the time with that many teams. And of course they gave him back to me, but still, that just gives you an example of a mistake that happens when you're doing that volume of teams. It's crazy. The waiver wire work and the time it takes to do start-sit decisions, it's unreal almost.
Final question for you before I let you go. This is the final week of the Football Guys Players Championship and the FFPC main events regular season. After this, the league playoffs will start. How is your portfolio, so to speak, looking? How are these teams looking with 1 week to go trying to get them into the playoffs?
I'm a little tilted. Tilted is a poker term, because I play a little poker, and I'm definitely tilted. We had some Zeke teams that I felt were almost like literally unbeatable. They hadn't really put up the huge deals, but the teams now, I'll take an example, we had a team put 180, then Zeke's on the bench. So that makes your stomach hurt and kind of gives you a bad taste in your mouth when you drafted these teams, and I feel like we got screwed on that deal. But we drafted him knowing that he was in the courts, but I still can't believe the NFL allowed that to happen, and so that leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But overall, I would say we have some bullets that you say it's hard to repeat, but I like a couple of our main event teams, and usually the ones I pick out that I like are the ones that that get there. Like I was doing an interview, I think it was you, like week eight, and I said, well, we had a Football Guys team that was sitting seventh, and you said, you know what, I like this main event team we have that's sitting like 180th, and sure enough, that was the team that won. So I think we're sitting pretty good. We could be sitting a whole lot better if we had Zeke. And we had Zeke in some big money leagues, confined leagues, like 20K worth. And that hurts when he's a key cog in that. It's hard to win when you do that. I say that, though. We drafted a team I was looking at tonight. I'm going through doing my portfolio and doing my waiver wire work and analyzing teams that have a chance to get to the shootout. And we drafted ODB in the first round. And we drafted Cameron Meredith. And we drafted Martavius Bryant. That was our three wide receivers that we drafted on that team. Mm. That team scored the most points in the league. If you told me that, I would say you were lying if you actually told me that. But it's the truth. I look at that team. I don't even know how I did it. I still don't know. It doesn't have receivers on it at all, and it's scored the most points in that league. So
yeah, well,
go figure.
But, and we've seen it time and time again. There's been plenty of times where we've looked at the team that wins the whole thing, or a team that's, you know, competitive, you know, in week 16 that finishes top five or top 10, you look at the team like, my goodness, how did they do it? But, you know, sometimes it's just the right line of decisions. And I remember talking to you last year about, you know, a couple of Football Guys teams. And I wanted to talk to you about the ones that were, you know, top 10 overall. And you said, no, look, Balky, look at this one here. That's, you know, it's only an 80th, but I think this one's a lot better. And sure enough, that one ended up shooting way up too. So it's a funny thing. And it's only, we've only got done with Act One. Now the real stuff starts
The
to
real
pick
fun
up.
begins. I'll tell you one quick funny story. Austin and I were talking. We lead the world in bench points this year. I don't think the record will ever be broken. I think we've set the all-time record for bench points. So anybody out there listening that feels bad, don't feel bad, because I guarantee you I've left more points on the bench than you could ever dream of leaving on the bench. Make your stomach hurt if you play fantasy football.
At least you can laugh about it right now. So that's
that's all you
good.
Can do is laugh about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Well, listen, man, I certainly appreciate you chatting with us again this week. The next time we talk, we'll be in the thick of the playoffs. Good luck to you, my friend, and we'll talk.
Looking
again
forward
soon.
To it, Balky. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's former KFFSC main event overall champ Justin McCord.
Former Kentucky fantasy football state champion. Overall champion, Justin McCord, joining the show this week. Justin, thanks so much for coming on. What, tell the listeners, when you're not playing high-stakes fantasy football, what are you doing for a living?
I am a business intelligence developer here in Louisville, Kentucky, for a large healthcare organization. So I do a lot of diving into data and helping our leadership translate that into something they can make decisions off of.
You know, I always talk about what people do for a living sometimes translate to fantasy football, but when it comes to crunching numbers and digesting data like you do, don't you get sick of it when you're applying that to fantasy football? I just go crazy.
You know, a little bit, but because the season sort of resets every year with free agency and coaching changes, that, you know, 16 weeks is not a ton of data to go off of.
And so
you know, it's better than nothing, but it's real easy to jump to the wrong conclusion sometimes.
Yeah. Believe me, I've done that several times.
I'm perfect at it.
You know, okay. So when I was emailing back and forth with you, your football guys team and your main event team, I had you down for 9-1 in both. But is that accurate, or are you 10-0-1?
I think we're 9-1 in both.
Nine
now.
And one in both, which is still insane. To 9-1 in football guys, 9-1 in the main event, which is, you know, fantastic. It'll be 18-2 combined in those. What's been the secret for those teams so far that they've enjoyed so much success and are really on the cusp of the league playoffs with 1 week to go?
You know, we've done a really good job. Farrell and I share the football guys team, and we've done a really good job of compromising on the players we like and who we want to get in the lineup. There hadn't been a lot of arguments this year, but the strategy for both has kind of been choosing that first or second round, maybe third round anchor piece. You know, you don't want to choose somebody that's not going to be consistent for you. You can really screw up a draft choosing the wrong guy in the first or second rounds. And then choosing people that have really high upside. You know, we're really excited about their ceilings and very comfortable with their floors, real moderate floors, not a lot of low floor guys. And then with that dual flex lineup, we just have a lot of options when it comes to setting our lineup. So we're watching the matchups and trying to look a few weeks ahead when we can, and just making sure that we're not taken by surprise by anything.
Yeah, I think the key there is always looking a couple of weeks ahead, no matter what point of the season you're at. I think the people that can do that and do it well are always going to be at a significant advantage. I don't have my facts and figures in front of me here, but I've talked about this with several high-stakes players, talked about this on the HSFF Hour as well. If you go through like the top three, four, even five rounds of high-stakes drafts this year, if you look back on it, I don't know if it's just me, but there was a ton, just a ton of busts in each of those rounds. Like the top 60 players, you must have had more than half of them bust out, you know, whether it was suspension or injury or underperformance. It was insane. Does it strike you, Justin, this year that there have been a lot more busts, a lot more landmines that you needed to avoid in the first few rounds than normal?
Yeah, there were a lot of guys that we didn't really like in the second or third round. It got to the point where, you know, in Kentucky, we bid on our draft spot, so you have a little control over that. And one of the reasons why I love going early this year was that some of the guys being taken 13th or 14th, I didn't like any better than some of the guys going 25th or 26th. And so getting one of those top-tier guys early really kind of separated you from the rest of the pack, and I think that makes a difference. But, yeah, this year you take even injuries out of it. There's just been a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, definitely.
In those first three, four rounds.
A lot of underperformance, for sure. It's just, and that's so that's sometimes that's even worse because you feel compelled to start those guys week in and week out because they're not injured. They're just sucking it up, which is it stinks, because how do you sit a guy like that? It's so difficult. And people played that game with Amari Cooper. A lot of people had Amari Cooper on their benches when he blew up for that 44
Oh,
excuse me,
absolutely.
against the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football. It's just it's crazy. Another one of those guys that has, well, he hasn't really been underperforming, but for the next few weeks he will. You've been quote unquote Zeke'd in your, I believe, main event and football guys, but I want to talk about the main event because you also had Aaron Jones on that team. He's out 3 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain or tear or whatever it is. It's the MCL injury. Is there somewhere else that you're looking to for running back help off the waiver wire this late in the game? Or are you going to try to ride Bilal Powell, with Matt Forte probably missing more action? And then Duke Johnson, who, it seems like he's coming up with 15 fantasy points just about every week in that Cleveland offense.
Yeah, I've been pretty happy with what Duke Johnson's been able to provide my team. Of course, Bilal Powell's out on a bye this week, so I've got to go grab somebody. The number one choice, I guess, right now is obviously Jamal Williams, because he's going to get a lot of work, even if Montgomery comes back. And I don't have a lot of waiver wire money left, which is why I can't have nice things. So my options are a little limited. But, I like Giovanni Bernard still available in my division. He came out and got 10 points this week with Hill out on IR. I think there's the possibility that he can keep that up with the PPR numbers that he gets. He's got a decent schedule as far as, he's got Tennessee at home. Then he's at Denver, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. The Bengals are going to need to throw the ball. And I think he'll get in enough passing down work to be a viable fill-in. I'll look at the running back in Atlanta, Teron Ward, now that Freeman's going to possibly miss more than 1 week with a concussion. He's a guy that I might be able to add to my roster. Corey Clement threw up that major weekend, but with the Jai coming in, that's not sustainable even at half those numbers. And I might even look towards Baltimore to see if when Terrence West is going to come back, if he's going to come back. And does Alex Collins really have a solid grip on that job? I think he does, but at this point, beggars can't be choosers. I got to have somebody to fill in for 1 week.
Yeah, I mean, there's some options out there. I think what I'm hearing, and I totally agree with you, there's no magic bullet out there that's gonna, magically solve anybody's running back problems that this deep in the season. One thing we're gonna talk about on the High Stakes Fantasy Footballer this week is this report that came out that Chris Carson could actually return before the end of the season in Seattle. Do you have any interest? I mean, obviously not this week, but do you have any interest in him in like a week 15, 16 play, given the fact that Seattle really has not had anybody but Carson have any kind of level of consistency back there this season, and that he is available in a lot of leagues after he broke his leg and went on IR? Or is this just a pipe dream? Is there nothing to see here?
It's probably a pipe dream. But at this point in the season, as far as running back goes, there's not a lot out there. And I feel really bad for the people who have had CJ ProSize on their roster all season, hoping he would get back into the form and the potential that everyone saw in him. And then for him to go on to IR now, maybe you feel a little better about Chris Carson. But that running game has just not been, for fantasy purposes, or really for NFL purposes, anything that you want to count on. But if you have a roster spot and you're not hurting for a running back, it might be worth, stashing him away. But I, in a position where I have a need to fill, I don't think I'm going to pin my hopes on that. And I have McFadden, but I don't feel comfortable starting him.
It's going to be
the Zeke situation.
We're at that time of the year now, too, with, we're coming up on week 11, the last week of the byes for all teams this year. There's going to be some teams that are dropping some, top 45, top 50 receiver type guys, and for these lottery ticket running backs, just to try to catch lightning in a bottle. And certainly that's a fine strategy for a lot of people, as long as you can keep everybody else healthy. Let's shift. We've been talking about running backs. I want to talk about receivers, specifically Josh Doctson. This is a guy who is on your main event team. And this is a guy that we waited all last year. We've been waiting this year, and he's actually shown some signs. And not only has he flashed, but he's getting an opportunity. Kirk Cousins is definitely looking his way. We know that Jameson Crowder's let a lot of people down. Terrell Pryor's let everyone down this year. Jordan Reed has been dinged up. Given all three of those guys under performance and injury issues, is Josh Doctson a guy that you'll be actually looking at to start down the stretch here as you play for some serious cash these last few weeks of the season?
I'm definitely eyeing his matchup against the Giants in Week 12 as a place where I can possibly exploit that weak Giants defense and maybe get some points out of him. He's a really difficult guy to put in your lineup. You know, his targets have gone up, as you mentioned, with everything that's going on with their receiving core. I mean, he's caught. He had 7 targets, I think, last week, which is a season high for him. So if that can trend upwards, that would be great. He's been kind of touchdown dependent too. I mean, he's had 3 touchdowns this year, but in each game where he had a touchdown, he only caught 1 ball.
Right,
and yeah. that's just not something I can consist of. But now, you know, Week 12 is a money week. You got to win that game. So if I think I can score a lot of points on that and help give me the head to head win, I'll absolutely put him in. We're going to see what some of the other players look like.
As it stands right now, on the other side of the field, or when Doxson's on the sideline in that game in Week 12, the leading receiver or the number one receiver for his opponent will be Sterling Shepard. He crushed it. This past week for you and your football guys league, 11 catches, 142 yards. With the Giants officially in free fall mode, it's only a matter of time before Ben McAdoo is given his walking papers. They will be throwing to keep up mostly the rest of the season. Are these games going to be closer to what we can expect from Shepard week in and week out? I mean, is he now like a 6 to 7 catch for 70 to 80 yards and, you know, a touchdown every other week type player down the stretch? Because that's huge for people if you can count on that the last 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think he can be. I mean, you said he caught 11 balls this week and he did it on 13 targets. You know, Eli Manning's got to be happy with that. He's got such limited options and here's somebody who's reliable. I mean, his schedule's not that bad. He's going up against Kansas City. He's got Washington, Oakland. These are teams you can throw the ball on, and New York's going to need to throw the ball on them. So, absolutely. I mean, if you've got better options than Sterling Shepard right now on your team, you are in a great position.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. You are a former, as I alluded to earlier, Justin, you are a former overall champ in the Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship. You beat out hundreds of teams for the crown. I know it's been a couple of years, but tell us what you remember about any of the tough decisions that you were faced with down the stretch, not only in weeks 14, 15, 16, but the last, you know, the league playoffs as well, because this is what fantasy owners are staring in the face here for basically every week now, the rest of the season, to either try to get into the playoffs, try to stay alive, and try to keep their teams among the top of the leaderboard. What do you remember about some of the tough lineup decisions you were faced with and how you made them? And then what was it like watching Week 16 down the stretch and seeing your team stay up on top of that leaderboard?
Well, you're always trying to start the best lineup every week, so it really shouldn't be a difference. But once you take that head-to-head component out of it, and it's just total points, you know, the first week, I think Week 14, I was doing my typical, I'm going to just try to set the best lineup as if it was a head-to-head week. And I want to be, you know, I'm not going to swing for the fences. I just want to put up a good week. And I put up like a 170, 180 type week that was great. And I thought, okay, so now that I've put up a good week and I'm kind of in the top third or top fourth of the playoff bunch, you know, I want to put up another good week, but I don't want to get too crazy with it. And I think I only put up 140. And I was very disappointed. And I didn't even go look at the leaderboard until later on in the week, when I realized a lot of people didn't have great weeks, and I had actually moved up some. And so now it got interesting moving into Week 16. Do I start really questioning? Do I want to put up my safe lineup, or do I want to, you know, take some shots here and see if I can move up? I definitely remember going light on receiver, and Kentucky's got that kind of old school lineup where you do the 3 wide receivers and 2 running backs and a flex. So I was definitely flexing all wide receivers in the hopes of finding a good game, looking for good matchups. I remember checking weather reports a lot more frequently than I normally do, just for kickers and for receivers, to see if it was going to be raining or windy or anything like that. And I was going into the final game, I think that Monday night game, with Team Shocker, you know, Dorsey and Khan right behind me. And I'm trying to I believe that was when I had the Green Bay defense or the Chicago defense, something like that, and Chicago was down to its third string running back, and I thought, there's no way that I don't get beat here. Maybe they were starting the Green Bay defense, I'm not even sure. And it was kind of a miracle sort of situation. They also had the Green Bay kicker, and Green Bay just kept scoring touchdowns and getting the one extra point instead of the field goals. Just little things like that you remember that
Well, and too, like when you're, it's got to be so frustrating seeing. I mean, if you're Jason Kahn, former world champ Jason Kahn, who has been there and done that, and then he's seeing, okay, maybe I can take this Kentucky thing down here, and Green Bay is moving the ball up and down the field, no problem, but they're not stalling out at the end when you need those extra points and the field goals. That has to be just extraordinarily frustrating, but certainly. Good for you, and congratulations on that. That never gets old when you can recall stuff like that. You alluded to it earlier. The KFFSC features what people would you would classify as more of an old school lineup. Two running backs, three receivers, tight end, flex, single quarterback, kicker, defense. Regular PPR. What was the most difficult adjustment that you made when you started playing the FFPC, where you have the point and a half per catch for tight ends, the dual flex lineups, only having to start two receivers. What was the most difficult adjustment, be it waivers, draft prep, whatever it was? What was the toughest thing for you to adjust to when you started playing FFPC?
I've almost always played the tight end position wrong. We went into it the first year and we used that dual flex to our advantage and tried to load up on some tight ends. And it just didn't work out for us. And we've tried to wait on tight end later and try to hit multiple value picks. And I've seemed to go about it every way, and every way I did it was wrong. And so this year, I'm watching that Thursday night game. We're all at Planet Hollywood. And Travis Kelce is having the exact game that I want him to have, where he's putting up enough points that you can put him in your starting lineup and feel okay about it. I think he had like 11 or 12 or something like that. But not where he's going to rocket up the board. And so drafting from the fourth position, he was there in the second round, and I felt really confident. Just I'm gonna get Travis Kelce, and I'm not gonna worry too much about that position for the
Yeah.
rest of the draft, and I'm just gonna draft receivers and go that way.
Yeah, and it also helped too that Thursday night game you saw Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt rocket up boards, and to a certain extent Alex Smith rose up a little bit too. Kelce really wasn't affected by it at all. He kind of his value stayed pretty consistent through. And I know the tight end thing is a challenge. I mean, and I don't know if you can ever really master it because the tight end value seems to change from year to year. We've seen, we cover the pros versus Joe's drafts on the HSFF hour every year, and I've seen some pretty good teams start off with, three tight ends in like the first 6 rounds, first 7 rounds or whatever. And they end up making a lot of noise throughout the season. And then I see other teams, do the exact same thing a year later. And, even when the tight ends are healthy, it doesn't always work out. It's a bizarre thing, and it's really maddening, to be honest with you. If I was trying to do that myself, I don't know if there's a good way to always consistently get it right because, everything's always changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's injuries, there's everything to go into it, but it is such a wild card in a sense. And when you look at the tight ends that went, last year I still had the number one seed in my division, but I took Gronkowski with my second pick, whereas this year it was Kelce, and that's just night and day, where
Right.
I was struggling to find someone at tight end to fill for all those weeks Gronk missed, and Kelce's been so consistent this year.
Yep, that's huge. Like our good friend Farrell Elliott always says, the best kind of ability is availability, and Travis Kelce has definitely been that this year. Now we don't have late breaking news, but to bring the listeners behind the curtain, we're recording this here on a Tuesday night. Rob Kelly, a few hours ago, was indeed IR'd by the Washington football team. What are your expectations now for Samaje Perine in that backfield with Chris Thompson? And if you want to talk a little bit about if Chris Thompson's value changes with no Rob Kelly, there's by all means. I'm just curious your thoughts on what that backfield now means for fantasy with those two guys.
I don't think it changes all that much. It's nice that one guy's going to get the work instead of two. That's good for fantasy purposes. But I mean, I think Washington right now is like 23rd in the league in rushing. It's not great. And it's so weird that you see Cousins having a great year for fantasy purposes. And he's putting up a ton of points. And then you look at the receivers and you're trying to kind of figure out where those points came from. Because nobody's really starring in that offense other than Chris Thompson, really. And the running backs are no different. They don't have a great schedule coming up. you know, I don't want to start him against New Samaje Perine against New Orleans. I guess if you hold him and you're in a position like myself right now where you absolutely need a guy, you know, he's probably not on the waiver wire, but I don't know that you feel comfortable putting him in your lineup. You've probably had him on the bench anyway, and I think he probably needs to stay there.
Yeah, I you know, and I'll tell you this about Cousins too, as a guy who owns him in a lot of leagues this year, you know how he's doing it. He's getting all these rushing touchdowns. I mean, he had two of them last week. It's with literally with no one else's help. Kirk Cousins is making himself, you know, fantasy worthy as a good starter, even on the weeks he's not, you know, slinging the rock for 3-4 touchdowns. He's doing it on his own, which is, you know, I don't know how sustainable it is, but right now it seems to be working for him. Corey Coleman is all set to come back this weekend. 100% go, says Huey Jackson. For the Browns receiver. He's going to make his return against the Jacksonville defense, which we know passing-wise, it's very, very difficult to move the needle against A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. So taking Week 11 out of the equation, Justin, from Week 12 on, can Corey Coleman be a top 25 receiver with DeShone Kizer throwing to him?
That would be cutting it close. I mean, he's very talented, and he put up, about 10 points in Week 1? Against a not bad Pittsburgh defense. I know we were all out there in Las Vegas watching that game thinking that, okay, maybe you know, Cleveland looked like they might steal one here. And it didn't end up working out. But it's not just Week 11. I mean, he's got Cincinnati. They got Baltimore later on. I mean, he's got four top 10 passing defenses coming up, and three of them are top five. And right now, I mean, if you want to be a top 25 receiver, a PPR receiver, you need to average like a little over 12 points. And yeah, he'll definitely get that in some games, but I don't know if he's going to get it over all of them. And then some of the guys hanging out in that area right now are guys like Juju Smith-Schuster and Robbie Anderson and Marquise Lee, guys that are like Devin Funches, guys that are coming on late in the season, either by injuries that have happened to other players or they're just clicking now. It's going to be difficult for Corey Coleman to break the top 25. And Cleveland, I mean, it sounds odd, but for a winless team, they're not a bad winless team. And they've only, you know, they 9 losses, but only 3 of them have been more than 2 scores. So yeah, they frequently find themselves down, but they're not getting killed in the first quarter. They're not immediately turning to the passing game and chucking the ball downfield. And I think that has a little something to do with it. I mean, yeah, if you've got Corey Coleman, obviously, you know, you put him in your lineup. If you held on to him for this long, congratulations. I'm glad you get him at this crucial part of the season. But I think we need to temper expectations, and I don't know that he's going to crack that top 25. He's going to be, I think, right on the border of it, and that's probably good enough for a flex position for you.
Yeah, and he's a big play guy too, which you have to understand that there might be some, you know, 3-for-25-yard weeks, especially against some of these secondaries that he's facing, and then all of a sudden, you know, you could have a 6-for-130 and 2 touchdowns. You know, it's so bizarre. Yeah. Follow up to that, Justin, is there any what kind of impact, if any, does Josh Gordon have on that Cleveland passing game this season?
If he can get in the game, you know, some cornerbacks got to guard him, so that. You know, Corey Coleman's not going to get double teamed. I don't know. I've been wrong about stuff like this before, but when someone's been off for that long, I don't have any confidence that they're going to come right in and get into the playbook, even if they've had the playbook the whole time and be a producer. But it's a big body. It's a great red zone target. He's not coming in my lineup, though.
What's difficult for me is I had basically given up on Josh Gordon as a player for both dynasty and redraft. I was finding better, what I thought was a better way of spending a roster spot instead of Josh Gordon. Here's what's frustrating me, because I didn't, you know, when he got reinstated, I was kind of like, well, now I should actually put in some bids on him, you know, just to be safe. And yeah. I was very, 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 very conservative. I mean, I wasn't really, you know, out of a $1,000 budget, we're talking like less than $30. It was nothing. And then I picked him up in like 5 leagues. And now here's the problem. Now I think like I have Josh Gordon on all these teams. Like he could blow up. And now I'm trying not to overvalue what he could be down the stretch, because it's going to be so difficult for even a guy his talent to be away from the game this long and to now jump into the season, granted, with what you think is fresh legs, But just to not be at the same level of football shape, you're asking so much here, especially when you're talking about the money weeks. This isn't like the middle part of the season or the early part of the season. These are the weeks when you really have to nail those lineup decisions. And I feel like putting Josh Gordon in over guys who helped get you there is more often than not going to be a mistake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got a new coaching staff. Unfortunately, if he's on my roster, he's got to prove me wrong. He's got to have the big week that I miss out on before I'll put him in my lineup.
Yeah, that's a
and
great
so
point.
I feel it's almost like a lose-lose, but good luck to anyone who has him.
Yeah,
and I wish you well.
Yes, yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You've been so gracious with your time, and I really appreciate it. Before I let you go, one last question. A player that was in this, you know, we touched on it earlier. There's a ton of them. A player that was drafted relatively high within the first few rounds in drafts this year that you either are ready to give up on, you know, knowing that you're trying to load up now here for the stretch run, or maybe a player you already cut, you know, because you don't see anything, you know, coming down the pike from him. And then conversely, a guy that you're actually going to be targeting on the waiver wire this week, or you know, maybe a potential league winner that could be sitting out there that you'd like to have a roster spot for.
As crazy as it sounds, you know, and I always wait on quarterback late, so I don't have a lot of sympathy for people who lost Aaron Rodgers, because
right.
you draft a high quarterback like that, you don't have a big backup. I feel terrible for everyone out there with Jordy Nelson.
Oh, for
and
sure.
That's the guy. I mean, what are you going to do? Not start Jordy Nelson? But I think if you're here in a money week, if you're on the edge of making the playoffs, or you're going to get in the playoffs and you need to win that head-to-head matchup, I don't know how you can put him in the lineup right now. I don't know if you want to cut him, but if you don't have anyone else you can cut, you know, I don't think I'm going to take that risk right now putting him in the lineup. It's not that I don't think Hundley's a capable quarterback. I think he can compete in the NFL and win NFL games. But for fantasy purposes, I mean, Jordy Nelson has just taken a nosedive. And then I really liked what I saw, as crazy as it sounds, with Dontrell Inman in Chicago now.
Yeah.
And he led the team in catches in his very first game. Chicago's always going to have to throw the ball, and the schedule coming up is not terrible for receivers. I might make him prove it again, but I definitely want to get that guy on my roster if I can, if we're talking about lottery tickets. And if you didn't like Doxson when we talked about him earlier, you know, maybe you want to look at Ryan Grant. He's, you know, he's been doing well with Kirk Cousins, and they're going to keep throwing the ball. And if Reed's going to be out and Crowder's going to be out and they're not giving Terrell Pryor the run, then maybe that's somebody you stash on your roster. He's available probably on most waiver wires.
A couple of points I want to make with what you just said regarding those guys. First of all, I always think it's important to pay attention to inexperienced or below average or, you know, whatever it is, young quarterbacks like Mitchell Trubisky, who they lock in on. Because chances are whoever they're locking in on, they're going to continue to do that until they're a little bit more seasoned in the NFL and can go through their progressions more comfortably and are able to find the open guy. From right now, it's a crutch. It's easy for them to lock onto that guy. And when they lock onto that guy, that can be really good for fantasy purposes. So I'm with you on Inman. Second point I'm going to make about the Packers situation with Jordy Nelson. I don't think you can drop Jordy Nelson. I have him in one league. I don't plan on dropping him. Here's the interesting thing I want to bring up. Brett Hundley he made some pretty good throws against the Bears, who have an underrated defense, on Sunday on the road, and got the win. The Packers are now 5-4. I don't want to say they're in the thick of the playoff race. That their schedule coming up certainly it definitely could be easier, but it's not. But you look at if the Packers, remember, they don't have to like be in the thick of the playoff race until week 17. If they can stay in it till like week 13, week 14, week 15, you know, just those last few weeks, you're telling me that Aaron Rodgers is not going to have that extra motivation? And not that it's a motivation thing, because I know the bone has to heal, but, you know, sometimes I just wonder if there is still a possibility that he comes back. And this isn't just me talking. I've noticed in the FFPC and, you know, Kentucky over the last few weeks, there's some pretty talented high-stakes drafters out there that have been picking Aaron Rodgers back up. So, and you talk about sticking a guy in off the waiver wire in week 15, week 16 that you're getting in right now. Normally I would say you're probably not going to be able to do it. Aaron Rodgers, you could for sure do it.
Yeah, if you have the space on your roster and you're fortunate enough to have a place where you can carry that guy, or maybe unfortunate enough that you lost Rob Kelly this week, but you're okay on running back, or so you've got somebody going to IR
like
and you've got a spot.
CJ Procise, it's another
right,
example.
You weren't using him anyway. Yeah. Right. If you can put that in there, and maybe you've got Jameis Winston like I do, and you're just, you know, kicking yourself. You've got somebody out there, yeah, and if he can get out there, if they can protect him, and he can get out there and take over, you know, that's a huge boon to somebody. You didn't have to spend the draft pick on him, and that makes all the difference in the world and can make up for you missing out on a guy like, you know, Allen Robinson, or you had Jordy Nelson, and now you get his quarterback back, and it's a win-win, and you get those double points. But if you've got the room for it, there's not a reason not to do it.
Rosters aren't going to lock for another few weeks, so you're going to have, you know, if Hundley is terrible the next couple of games, Packers can't get a win, okay, maybe you let Rodgers go. But, I mean, if he gets another win, maybe two wins, I'm telling you, but we might be talking about Aaron Rodgers as the pickup of the year. And, you know, chances are still against it right now, but things are crazy, Justin, and they're only going to get crazier. I really appreciate you coming on the show this week and dropping some knowledge. Best of luck to you. In both your FFPC main event team, your football guys, players, championship team that are both crushing it. Best of luck to you in all your Kentucky leagues as well. I hope the ball bounces your way this weekend and the rest of the season. And we'll talk again soon, man.
Thanks, Balky. I always appreciate talking to you. It's always a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.